You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello and welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter Anthony Nocomo. It's been a little bit of a disappointing year, I think, for the Mets, but it's been one that's had some real bright spots and some things to get excited about going forward. And it seems like there's another one here within the last few days. Tell me about the newest young swinging Met, Mr. Herrera.
Yeah. Gilson Herrera, he's an interesting little player. The sort of the scouting book on him is he's probably about average to above average glove, which we haven't really seen yet. He had a little trouble with that when he first came up. But he's an average to above average glove with a lot of pop for someone who's 5'8". I think he profiles as a guy who could, you know, hit 10 to 15 homers in the majors with a decent batting average, which is a nice thing to have from a middle infield position. He's played a little shortstop, but he's really a second baseman, and they're going to try him out there pretty much exclusively in September. Daniel Murphy going to the disabled list was a little bit of a blessing in disguise, or silver lining for the Mets, in that they can take a look at Herrera now. At age 20, he's the youngest player in the big leagues, and you know, they're not sure exactly what they have, but he's definitely shown some bright spots already at the plate, and they like him. They like him as a good little player.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I've certainly been wrong more than a few times, not just in the past, but today even. But it seemed like at the time the deal was made when they acquired him, the reaction was, oh, nice get, but not necessarily a guy who had the potential to be a big league regular in the relatively near future. Is this a guy whose stock has climbed since the deal, or was he maybe undersold even at the time of the deal?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely moved fast. And if you look at what they got in that trade for essentially for a month of Marlon Byrd when they were already well out of the race, to get a guy who now profiles maybe as a big league regular in a middle infield position and a really hard-throwing reliever who's already had some success, I mean, that's pretty good. I think at the time, you know, he was a little overshadowed because they did get Vic Black in that deal. And Vic Black was already very close to the majors, and he came up in September and really showed his stuff right away. So people were kind of focused on Vic. And this was a guy who was 19 at the time. You're saying, oh, well, you know, we'll look up one day and, you know, maybe he'll be a prospect for us. And, you know, he didn't really light those prospect lists on fire. I think he's the number 8 Mets prospect as far as MLB.com ranks them. So he's not exactly that blue chipper, like when Travis d'Arnaud came up last year or anything like that. But I don't think anyone's overlooking him anymore. I mean, I think this is a guy who, you know, maybe he's not going to be on the team next April 1st, but I don't think anyone would be surprised at this point if he comes up and makes an impact at some point next summer and really going forward establishes himself in that middle infield conversation.
It has the makings of being kind of an interesting roster crunch. I mean, third base is pretty well set, and it looks like maybe first base is squared away too. Mets have a pretty good second baseman, though he's a guy who's been talked about as a potential candidate for a move. And then you've got Herrera, and you've got Wilmer Flores, who's playing some shortstop. And Ruben Tejada hasn't had a terrible year. I know he's not the most popular guy, but he's had a pretty decent year. How do they make all these pieces fit together with only 4 infield spots and no DH in the National League?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about all the pieces you just mentioned are that all of them have some sort of potential. All of them have something that they do well, but none of them, you know, have been good enough that they've really laid claim to the position. I mean, Wilmer Flores, you know, has been a top prospect in this organization forever, and he's had multiple chances this summer to really wrest that starting shortstop job away from Ruben Tejada, and he hasn't been able to do it. Now in September, they're playing him every day, and he's really just now starting to hit well. You know, if he goes and has a monster September, or even a very good September, he could sort of put himself in a position where he's, you know, looked at as the starting shortstop when it's his job to lose going forward, which is something that Ruben Tejada has had the past couple of years and, you know, has been off and on, but more off than on, I would say. So they've definitely got some interesting pieces. And what Herrera adds to the mix is if he comes on and has a great September, you know, it's not necessarily means Daniel Murphy's a goner this winter. I think that's something they were going to look at doing anyways, is trading Murphy, considering where his contract is going to be a year out from free agency and all that. But it gives them a little more flexibility where they don't necessarily have to fear that. You know, they can say, well, maybe Herrera's not ready right now, but we have the pieces between Tejada and Flores to hold us over. You know, it's not necessarily the end of the world if we trade Daniel Murphy. I'm not saying they're going to do that, but it's certainly something they're going to have to look at, and it might be something at this point that's in the best interest of the franchise, given that roster crunch you talked about.
Flores is an interesting guy because when they started talking about him at shortstop, I wasn't there in the scrum, but I got to imagine there were some baffled looks and maybe even some snickers. I mean, this is a guy who's known for his bat and not really known for his glove, even away from shortstop. And yet it seems like he's been at least adequate enough to hold his own at short for that to continue to be a possibility, and yet he hasn't really hit. First and foremost, why do you think he hasn't taken off more at the plate for a guy who came as such a lauded hitter through the minors?
Yeah, it's a good question, and he's basically proven everything there is to prove at Triple A. I mean, he's gone down there and raked, and you can talk all you want about the Pacific Coast League and especially Vegas being a hitter's park and a hitter's league, but he's gone well above and beyond, and there's really no point in him being down there anymore. You know, why that hasn't translated to the majors, I don't know. I mean, some guys, that's just a big leap. You know, in his case, if you're looking for excuses, you could say, well, he's come up and he's played a game and then he's sat two and then he's played two and then he's sat three. And it's really hard to get established, especially when it's one of your first couple tastes of the level. And maybe that's it. I mean, he's playing every day now. He's really playing better than he has at any point since he's been up there. You know, last year he came up in September, had a little cup of coffee and wasn't completely healthy. He had some leg issues going on that he was playing through, so it wasn't the best barometer of what he's capable of doing. But, yeah, I mean, even now when he's hitting, he's not really showing that extra base pop, and until that comes, you're really not going to commit to a guy. But he does show the tools. He shows flashes, and you look up every once in a while, you see him hit a ball right on the nose, and you say, oh, this is the guy they've been talking about for the past 6 or 7 years. You know, we forget how young he is. He's still in his very early 20s, and he still has that potential. I think given playing time, and I think he's going to get it here going down the stretch and maybe into next season, he will have every opportunity to show it.
Has he been adequate enough at shortstop that if he hits, that all adds up to worth doing?
Yeah, I think he's been surprisingly good defensively. I mean, there are plays. I mean, he's had a couple games. Just there was a game in L.A. where he – you know, booted a ball and fell down. It was almost comical. And he's had a couple flashes like that where you look up and you say, okay, this guy, you know, really, I see what they're talking about now. He's not a shortstop. But, you know, far away, that hasn't been few and far between. I mean, he's made the routine plays. He's not exactly the smoothest guy in the world around the bag turning double plays, but he's getting it done. You know, the arm strength he could stand to improve, you know, the footwork he could stand to improve. But at the end of the day, he's making the plays more often than not. And it's not like Ruben Tejada was this amazing defensive shortstop. He was good. You know, at his best, he was definitely above average. But he also had some lapses of his own over there. I'm not saying Ruben Tejada is, you know, worse than Wilmer Flores. I don't think anyone would argue that. But if Wilmer can certainly go above and beyond that offensive threshold that Tejada has established the past couple of years, I think from what we've seen, you have to think his gloves can play. If you're going to go offensive that position, he's definitely meeting, at least right now, that minimum defensive threshold that you need to meet.
And it seems like, and I'm not entirely sure why this is, but it seems like the other guy that's kind of been talked about around the Mets here again lately is Juan Lagares. And he, you know, there's been some talk about can anybody be as good as the metrics say he is defensively. He's kind of had some pluses and some minuses with the bat. As he gets to the end of this year, what do you think the kind of overall story of Lagares' story of season is this year?
Yeah, I mean, he came into this year almost fighting for playing time, and it was sort of the opposite of what we were just talking about with Wilmer Flores. It was a guy who you knew he was already Gold Glove caliber defensively, and it was just a matter of if he could hit. I mean, Gold Glove's great and all, but if you're going to hit 200 with a 650 OPS, that's not going to fly. Now, the thing about Lagares offensively is he has the tools. I mean, it's obvious to people that he can hit. He really has a nose for squaring up the ball, and, you know, when he's hot, he does those things with regularity. His main problem is he's a bad ball hitter. He's always has been a bad ball hitter, and he falls in love with chasing that ball out of the zone, and he can't hold up, and that leads to strikeouts and you know, no walks, and he doesn't have that on-base percentage. So it's been an issue. Now, the stretches he's had, and you can really see, and you can look at the numbers, the stretches he's had where he's been hot at the plate, and, you know, he's not a home run hitter, but he can drive the ball in the gap for sure and give you some singles and doubles. But those stretches have always coincided with the plate discipline. So, you know, if he can figure out a way, or the Mets can sort of pound it into his head that, you know, just wait for your pitch in the zone, which is sort of their team-wide philosophy, but, you know, he's a little bit of a square peg in a round hole in that sense. But if he can catch on, I think he definitely, he's not going to be an offensive star, but if he could be offensively adequate, and given his defense, that's more than enough.
Do you think it's realistic? They're talking about him as a leadoff man. Do you think it's realistic that he can get enough control of the strike zone to be a passable leadoff man? I mean, putting aside stolen bases, you got to get on base for the guys who drive in runs. Do you think he has the capacity to at least do enough that he gets on base enough to be a reasonable leadoff man?
Yeah, I at this point in his career, I find it a little hard to believe, only because he really hasn't shown up for any extended length of time. Now, like you said, he's prone to streakiness a little bit, and when he gets on one of these hot streaks where, you know, he is controlling the strike zone and you know, maybe drawing a couple more walks and just getting on base with his hits, then, yeah, you could probably stick him there. You could definitely stick him there in a pinch, and guys can obviously get better. But as far as the, you know, base skill set that he has, I'm not sure if he's that guy. He hasn't really shown it thus far, but the Mets also don't have that guy, so he might become it by default. And if he does, you could probably do worse considering what he's given them, especially lately.
All right. Well, Anthony Nocomo, thanks for chatting here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks everybody for listening.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game streamed live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.